Connor, are you there?
I am, Jake. How you doing?
I'm doing good. So what do you want to talk about today, Connor?
I want to carry on with you a conversation, and for the benefit of your listeners, that I was having with some friends last week that I think is happening more and more, at least I'm seeing it more and more, or perhaps it's just more and more visible, and that is people who have had a wrong done against them by a government agent, let's say a police officer who wrongly, you know, goes into the wrong apartment or what have you and destroys property or kills someone, and then that individual then turns around and sues the government. The question is it okay, is it at all compatible with libertarianism or just liberty in general to sue the government, right? So let's say a wrong is done against me and I sue the city I live in and I demand, you know, $1 million in damages. And let's say I'm even awarded that, right, that the judgment is made in my favor and I am awarded the $1 million. Well, where does that come from, right? The money that you are awarded in that case where you have a successful claim against the government simply comes from your fellow neighbors. It comes from the taxpayers. There's no magical fund that the city has separate and apart from what they coercively obtain through taxes, whether direct or indirect through debt and such, to fund the government's award in your favor, in my favor, in this case, $1 million. So is it right that I ever sue the government for monetary damages? And so we had some good discussion with this last week. I was arguing the position that it's not okay because you're effectively awarding yourself money if you win that came in the expense of your fellow taxpayers. Well, one criticism or one rebuttal to that as well, as voters, we're all indirectly responsible. And so if, you know, maybe the city council made a bad decision and there was, you know, some property damage made because they're trying to do this or that, that, well, you could vote them out because, you know, they were voted in, the voters should be responsible. That doesn't say anything for the minority, of course, who did not elect that individual. How is it right that a minority of voters who voted for the other guy or a person who wouldn't have done that, how is it right that they should be held accountable for the actions of that person they did not want in office? And so that's kind of the basis for the conversation we were having. The solution that kind of we went to and that I was trying to guide the conversation to and what I want to talk about today is the idea of removing immunity from these individuals, right? The issue is that the agents of the government are given immunity for their actions such that if you want to prosecute, you can't do it against the individual who is invading your home or destroying your property or whatever. You have to do it against that person's employer, the government, this abstraction that feeds itself on our you know, coercively obtained property through taxation. How is it right, then, that we're not able to hold the individuals accountable that are responsible? So the idea is to remove the immunity that individual enjoys as a result of their government employment such that they individually can be held accountable for their actions. This is the same as anyone else who's not employed by government, that they can be liable for the actions that they perform. And I think the main benefit here, there's lots of ways we can take the discussion, lots of things I want to talk about, but I think the main benefit here to doing that is that you immediately disincentivize power-hungry people and irresponsible people from seeking employment with the government, right? Because people who maybe are a little bit trigger-happy or they have this, you know, ego power complex and they would love to be a police officer and boss people around all day, it would discourage those people because the first time that they step out of line, they can be individually sued or prosecuted. They could be thrown in jail because they, you know, escalated force inappropriately or tased someone when they shouldn't have. It would really discourage those people from seeking employment in a situation where they would otherwise, and as they currently are, granted immunity. So I want your feedback on that. I'd like to get your take, and as I said, I've got plenty of things to talk about here, but what do you think of the idea of removing immunity from government agents?
Well, I think this is absolutely brilliant. I think this is any kind of institution, whether it is a state institution or if it is a institution that's created by the state, like corporations. I mean, because really what you're talking about is moral hazard.
Sure.
What you're talking about is the ability for one individual to transfer all the liabilities to somebody else for their behaviors.
That's exactly right. And the reason, as I say at the outset of this, that's become so visible, there's stories every day of government corruption, of the police state. You know, Anaheim right now is in a bunch of turmoil because a cop shot a the kid in the back of his leg as he was running away, and then went up to him allegedly and executed him execution style in the back of head. So Anaheim is rioting because of this, and that police officer, you know, of course, is given immunity and at worst would be fired from his job, and in many, maybe some rare circumstance, would be prosecuted, but, you know, is generally granted immunity for the actions. Miss Nevada, many people, I think like 2007, many people have heard of this in the past couple of days, that a police force, I think a SWAT team, invaded her apartment wrongfully. They meant to go to like apartment C and she was apartment A, and forced her out of bed at gunpoint, and she was sleeping in the buff. So all these armed male deputies are forcing her out of bed in the nude and make her stand there to be interrogated, when in fact they had invaded the wrong apartment. A couple years ago, the story made the round of the guy here in Utah who was tasered, Jared Massey. The video of that, the dash cam from the police car, the video was made available, put on YouTube, millions of views. He was tased without even being, you know, arrested or any charges read against him or anything. He was awarded $40,000. In the case of Anaheim that I mentioned, the mother is now suing, seeking $50 million in damage. So we hear of all these stories where there are wrongful actions committed, there's horrible crimes, even if sanctioned under the color of law by these government agents, and these people are suing the government. They're saying, well, I want money. I want $50 million, or, you know, this taser guy, I want $40,000, whatever. That money is taken from me when I had nothing to do with it. Right, I'm being forced to help fund the award against a person who, yes, did suffer at the hands of someone. There is a wrong there that needs to be righted, that needs to be corrected. The question is by whom and how. And
well,
what I argue,
you nailed it on the head, though, because it is about. And again, maybe this is because you're so deep into the details of your forthcoming book, this connection between responsibility and liberty. But this is really there. I mean, I don't want to conflate, but it's almost the same thing, liberty and responsibility. I mean, they're almost the exact same thing. It's like looking at a person from the left side and then walking around and looking at the right side. It's the exact same thing. You cannot separate them. And whether it's, you know, these nicer situations, or like in Ogden, this poor guy that was
Matthew David Stewart,
who was in this whole world of hurt because he defended himself from a task force that just a year prior murdered an innocent man. And what that tells me is if that same task force has not been held responsible for that prior, which is a murder. And if anybody else in this world created had done that, heaven forbid a black guy, we know that that guy, that they would have been taken care of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. I definitely agree that liberty and responsibility are kind of complementary. And the problem that we face here when we give immunity to the agents of government is that we separate accountability, which is kind of related to responsibility. We aren't making these individuals accountable. They feel that they can get away with more things, of course, that they could do if they weren't wearing a badge or didn't have the sanction of the law on their side. And so we're removing from people the accountability for their actions. We're justifying things for agents of government that would be not tolerated in the slightest were they to be done by you or I or the average citizen. So we need to reinfuse government, as it were, with responsibility, with accountability. And I think the quickest way to do that, of course it's quite radical based on where we're now at, but the best way, the most moral way, the easiest and most effective way, is to simply remove their immunity and say, look, if you commit a wrong, if you do something and violate someone's rights, even if you were told by your boss to do so, or even if the law justifies you in doing so, you individually will be held accountable.
But see, I think you're nailing something that most libertarians, you know, I'm thinking more like your Ayn Rand type, the people that just dip into the philosophy, that they ignore about this classical liberal tradition. It's not just liberty, it's also equality before the law. And that is to say that a cop should be held to the same standard as a citizen. I can't believe it's controversial. All right, guys, come on back. We got a great topic. Middle of the Boyack Review. Connor Boyack with us today. 801-254-5855. Give us a call. All right, guys, welcome back. Mental Self Defense Radio. We are in the middle of the Boyack Review. We've got Connor Boyack on the line. Connor, are you still there?
I still am.
Okay, great. So before the break, you were bringing up this idea of government employees, are they actually liable for their actions? I mean, it sounds preposterous. Like, it seems like a no-brainer. They should be, but they're not.
Right. So, like, if I'm a UPS delivery guy, right, is it okay that because UPS decides to let me do so, I can rifle through people's packages and, you know, damage them or take them and use them on my own? So simply being employed somewhere, and if that institution happens to justify you in doing something, cannot innately turn an immoral action into a moral one. It cannot legitimize an illegitimate action. So the question is, why are these government employees, right? You hear police all the time, that taser situation I mentioned from Utah a couple years ago, the cop was cleared of any wrongdoing when it was a clearly aggressive act that was uncalled for and not justified, and he was totally cleared, right? These internal police review boards just totally, you know, either give a little slap on the wrist usually, or at worst will demote you or put you at a desk chair, or sometimes even terminate you. But, you know, the question is, why should individuals, agents of the government, who are just people like you and I, why should they be held to a different standard than you or I, than the rest of us, right? If you or I do these actions that are clearly criminal in nature, when they are in fact criminal, we're guilty, we're going to be sentenced, we're going to be thrown in jail. Why is it that simply wearing a government uniform and being given a badge and being employed by the government somehow exempts them from the same standard of morality and ethics that apply to you and I? The proposal to remove immunity from these people, as I mentioned, has many benefits, but the main one I see is that, you know, we would still have government, we would still have people who wanted to work for the government. Maybe the benefits would still be great, maybe they'd have to pay a little bit more because they'd have less people to employ and less people who, you know, who would be enticed enough to go work for the government and assume that risk. Whatever the case may be, this wouldn't abolish government. This would simply significantly discourage people who are kind of the power-happy, type.
Yeah, psychopaths.
Seek employment at the government. So I want to share a couple of stories that I think drive this home. There's a great white paper that was written by the Cato Institute called Overkill, and it talks about the rise of paramilitary police raids in America. Fascinating stuff, just chock full of all sorts of, I hesitate to say goodies because they're horrible, but just all these statistics and stories that just make your blood boil. And here's one that I want to share that's exactly germane to the issue we're talking about, and that is that these people who are employed by the government do so in many cases, not all, out of a sense of being able to kind of play and have that power and have fun with it. So this is 1997, and there was a CBS News report of a sheriff's department SWAT team in Maricopa County. And they were on a call out, and one member of this SWAT team in an on-camera interview told the reporter that the best part of being on the SWAT team was that, quote, "You get to play with a lot of guns. That's what's fun. You know, everybody on this team is, you know, everyone loves guns." And then another person added, "Hey, the bottom line is it's friggin' fun, man. That's the deal. Nobody wants to take burglary reports." And so you have these guys, whether, you know, they grew up in video games, they just have these personalities, maybe they're veterans and they like the adrenaline, I don't know. But you have these people who like what they do because of the thrill, because of the excitement, and it creates a situation in which, as you noted earlier, there is moral hazard. Certain actions are incentivized, encouraged, or justified that otherwise would be excoriated, right? These situations, if some other guy said, "Hey, I get to use, you know, guns, it's friggin' fun, I'm going to go, you know, point it at my neighbor and tell him to, you know, get down on the floor so I can search his home," you do that for any other person, of course, you know, we condemn it and it's horrible and wrong, but suddenly that these people become agents of the government and, oh yeah, that's just a normal, you know, part of the job. There's so many stories like this. You know, in Marquette County, Wisconsin, for example, this was, I think, also is mid-90s. He disbanded his county's SWAT team. This was the county sheriff, in Wisconsin. And he says, in this report, "Quite frankly, the people on the SWAT team get excited about dressing up in black and doing that kind of thing. I said," this is the sheriff speaking, "I said, this is ridiculous. All we're going to end up doing is getting people hurt." You know, this guy recognized the moral hazard. He completely disbanded his SWAT team, recognized that he should not be incentivizing or justifying these aggressive actions that should not be done and are not justified. There's another story, again, in the late 1990s, and I have plenty more stories recently, but this report is a couple years old and has a lot of great stuff from a few years ago. This one was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It got so bad with these SWAT teams and such that the city had to hire an outside investigator. So they had these botched drug raids, kind of like we've had in Ogden. There are these shootings. So the city hired a criminologist to come out and do an investigation of the police tactics employed by the city. And the guy who did this report, his last name was Walker, was apparently totally floored. And as he later said, quote, "The rate of killings by police was just off the charts. The SWAT team had an organizational culture that led them to escalate situations upward rather than de-escalating." And I think that pinpoints exactly what I'm talking about. If you or I are in a situation, maybe we conceal carry, maybe we're confronted with someone, we don't want to get shot. We want to go home to our, you know, our families. We don't want to shoot an innocent person. We don't want to escalate a situation where more people might get hurt. We have this innate trigger, you know, mechanism for de-escalating. We don't want conflict. And, of course, there are exceptions to that general rule. And yet here we have saying that there was, at least in this case, an organizational culture that led them to escalate situations. I contend it's because there is no individual accountability. There is immunity offered to these people so that they do not face the consequences of their actions, and they therefore feel justified and able to escalate when otherwise they would not. They would feel discouraged because maybe they wouldn't want to be sued by the spouse of the guy they just shot and killed, and they wouldn't want to go bankrupt and, you know, have their family fall apart with all the stress and whatever because of this action they committed. I'm interested in reinvigorating government with accountability. And there's plenty of other changes I'd like to, you know, do, clearly. But this simple action of removing the immunity that the agents of the state are given, I think would do wonders in reconnecting these individuals back with their individuality, right? Whereas now they're kind of part of a collective, they're a member of a SWAT team, or, you know, they're the tax collector at the IRS, where I read a report this morning that something like, oh, it was 22% of seizures of taxpayers' property, the IRS did not follow the law. Nearly one quarter, right? And it's just funny because it makes no sense to any commonsensical individual. We criminalize counterfeiting by a private party. You or I, we can't counterfeit. We'll go to jail. And yet we legalize the Federal Reserve, which counterfeits every day.
Now, the hypocrisy runs deep. Now, I'm sorry to interrupt. Hold on. We've got a... We got a caller. You okay taking a caller? Hold on, I want to bring him in. Let's see. Radio Richard, are you there?
I am.
So what do you want to say, Richard?
Just a quick comment on a few years ago, I was watching the news, and Chris Cannon was on there, and he was all dressed up in black, and he was out with the SWAT team, and they had a camera following him around, and they busted down this door, went and terrorized the people, da-da-da-da-da, and when he came back out, he made the comment that that's the funnest thing that he ever did.
It's kind of scary, isn't it?
And they, hey, you know, like he says, you know, they put that uniform on and they're just a whole different turtle. Hey, that's all I got to say about that.
I appreciate the input, Richard. You're spot on. I mean, it's scary. And I think, you know, what you talk about here, Connor, you know, obviously the low-hanging fruit is clearly law enforcement because they're so visible and, you know, they carry weapons and whatnot. But this should also go for our politicians. I mean, imagine if they voted on something that actually caused harm, which happens all the time. Imagine if we actually had politicians accountable and responsible and personally liable for these kind of things. We'd see some quick change.
Exactly, and by no means am I targeting police only, clearly, because they are engaged in such egregious acts of violence in many cases, it's quite easy to point them out and use them as examples. But
well, and it's hard, too, because I have family, immediate family, that are high up in law enforcement, have done it for careers, and there are good people in law enforcement, the majority of them are, but the system itself, and that's what you're talking about, the way the incentives work, they create a really bad powder keg kind of situation. Not only the lack of accountability and responsibility, but this also command and control, top-down authoritarian type of thing, militaristic type of attitude. This is why I like guys like the Oath Keepers, right? Because they're saying, hey, you know what?
Absolutely.
No. Keep your oath to the Constitution. Hold on, we got Dale in Salt Lake City. I want to bring him in. Dale, are you there?
Good afternoon.
Dale, you're on.
Yes, I enjoyed your guys' conversation. It riled me up, so it must be good radio. and I have not caught all of it, but I wonder if you have discussed the main problem with any kind of remedy to the situation, which is that the government at all levels really decides the scope of its own power, and there hasn't been a single significant reversal in the process you guys have been describing towards the national security state in this century. There has not, or in the past 100 years, there hasn't been a significant reversal in the process, and I wonder why anyone would think that the political solution is going to produce a reversal at some point when it hasn't in all these decades.
No, that's a good question. I mean, you know, is there such a thing as a political solution? I mean, I would maybe venture to say that the freed slaves might disagree that, yes, in fact, there is power to that. But the trick is they don't have an interest in it right now. And I don't disagree with that, but how do we affect that? Is that something close to what you're getting at?
Well, Jake, it was hardly a reversal for the authoritarian, you know, in terms of authoritarianism, to put millions and millions of Southerners in the former Confederacy in the position of second-class citizens in order to improve the lot of, you know, a few million black slaves. But, yeah, you know, the central government is on a march towards totalitarianism, and the flaw in the system is that the states of the Union were supposed to be sufficiently powerful to guard you know, this from happening. That was overthrown in the 19th century, that idea, and now it's the, you know, the fox is in charge of the hen house. Why would we think that we're going to be able to vote our way out of this when the big capital is the entity that decides who we can vote for?
So, Connor, I don't know if he's representing your perspective about, are you saying voting our way out, or is it doom and gloom, as Dale is saying, we might as well just throw up our hands?
Negative. Excuse me, Jake, if I may cut in.
Yeah.
You know, my argument always gets reframed like that. I think doom and gloom is to accept the yoke of the elective, so-called elective process, accept that the fact that if we can't get Orrin Hatch or his...
But Dale, I think that the reason I say that is I don't think Connor... I mean, maybe I'm wrong, Connor. I don't think you're saying that voting is the answer here. Is that fair?
Well, and Dale may be suggesting... He may have in mind an alternative course other than a political one, rather than just going home and moving to the mountains and, you know, isolating yourself from society. I can't speak to that. But, Dale, I sympathize with you greatly, and let me defend my or articulate my position this way. I don't advocate that the political solution is the solution. In terms of gaining ground for liberty, I'm a fan of, as just a rude metaphor, throwing mud against the wall to see what sticks. I think we need to fight this battle on many fronts. I think we have had some good successes, limited though they may be in recent years, through the political machine. And clearly we are in the minority. For every good law we get passed or bad law we get repealed, there's 4,000 other ones coming right down the line. This is why I formed about a month ago, we launched the Libertas Institute to try and fight politically and educationally to gain ground. But it's also why I wrote the book that I've got coming out in November, which is Latter-day Responsibility, which it doesn't advocate for any political change. It says we ourselves need to change. We need to inspire people to take care of themselves, to become independent of the state, to make the state completely irrelevant by making ourselves productive and responsible and charitable, so that we change society, we revolutionize society individually rather than seeking political means of doing so. So by no means am I advocating that the political method and approach is the one that will fix this. I simply, with you know, this segment we're doing here and observing such an egregious distinction between what you or I and I as individuals can do and what agents of the government can do, and I'm offering a solution that I think would be pretty quick to legislate. It would be pretty clean. It would be, of course, messy. I mean clean in terms of enacting
okay. Hey, Connor, sorry to butt in, but Dale, I want to give you the last word because we're bumping on a commercial.
Sure.
I think we're all on the same page. Isn't that fair to say?
I think it's sounding like it would eventually resolve to that. I guess the thumbnail of my point was...
Well, we're running out of time, Dale. You can call if you want to call right back. We got a commercial. I can't stop it. I appreciate it, guys. The Boyard Review every Tuesday. Come on back. More mental self-defense after the break.